Hey guys, my name is Brad. I'm the lead pastor here at New Life Church, and I want to welcome you to our online teachings. One of our core convictions as a church is that everyone is welcome, no one is perfect, and anything is possible. Now, I know that for some of us, coming into a church building might be intimidating, it might be scary, and I get that. But I want you to know that there is always a place for you here at New Life, and that you were made for real in-person community. We meet on Sundays in downtown Wayland. You can check out our website for more information on service times. But for now, I hope God speaks powerfully to you through his word. Love you guys.
Hey, New Life Church. Thank you so much for joining us today. If we have not had a chance to meet yet, my name is Brad, and we're really glad you're here. So as we begin today, I want to let you in on the conversation that my wife and I had when we were first thinking about having kids. We had been married for 3 years at the time. We were relatively new homeowners, and we got to thinking, man, this adulting thing is a lot of work. It's really hard. And so it'd be really nice to have some help around here to maybe mow the lawn or help do laundry. You know, as a business owner, my wife pays taxes, a lot of taxes, and we thought some tax breaks would really be nice. It could be really useful to have a kid or two around here. And then as we thought about the future of our lives and getting older, we thought, man, we're going to need somebody to change our diapers one day. And so as we talked more and more, we realized having a kid or two around would be really, really useful. Now, turns out the joke is on us, because now that we have three kids, we find that they find us more useful than anything else. Like, mom, dad, I'm hungry, or I'm poopy, or I don't want to go to bed, or where is this, or where is that? It kind of feels like they constantly need something from us. And when we deliver, we're the best parents in the world. And when we don't deliver, or we say no, we are the worst parents in the world. Can anybody else relate to this? Man, we know there is a massive difference between people who love us and people who just want to use us. Now, I know my kids love me. I know that's true. I'm not saying all they do is use me. But have you ever been used by somebody? Have you ever been in a relationship where all you feel like is they want something from you? They don't care so much about who you are or what you're going through. They just need something from you, and so you feel used by them. What about the alternative? Have you ever been in a relationship with somebody where you just know you're loved? Where you're loved incredibly well, where this person checks up on you and sees how you're doing and takes a genuine interest. And when you talk back and forth, you know they are listening, not just to respond, but to actually hear what you say and understand it. I think we all know the difference between being used in our relationships and being deeply, deeply loved in our relationships. In fact, take just 10, 15 seconds now and just tag somebody in the comments today. Somebody who you have been used by. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Tag somebody who you just feel like loves you really well. Maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's a sibling. Maybe it's a spouse. Just tag somebody in the comments below. Just letting them know how much you appreciate them and that you feel loved by them deeply today. And so why is it so easy for us to differentiate between being loved by someone and being used by someone? Because I think it speaks to something deeper that exists in each and every one of our lives. None of us want to be the means to someone else's end. In fact, all of us have a deep longing to be loved for who we are as we are right now. There's a massive difference between being used by someone and being loved by someone, and we can all spot it really easily. Now, we're in the last couple chapters of the book of Mark, and as we wrap up this gospel story over the next several weeks, Jesus is in a really tense place in his ministry. It's Passover week, the tension is mounting. He knows that there are people after him. In fact, the religious leaders, the scribes, the Pharisees, they're all beginning to plot against Jesus to have him somehow arrested, tried, and crucified. And what makes it worse is that even some of the people that are closest to Jesus, Someone like Judas, one of his followers who has been with him for years in his ministry, at this point is just using Jesus' ministry to steal money. He's the treasurer for the disciples, and he's stealing money and using it as his own, and he's just using Jesus at this point. And I can't help but imagine that the human side of Jesus right now, the full humanity of Jesus, is really grieved right now because he knows about this betrayal. He knows about being used. And in the midst of this grief, there is a story that happens that is so beautiful. It's a story that happens in the midst of tension. It's a story that happens in the midst of Jesus being used and hurt by people that were close to him. Check it out. Watch what happens in Mark 14, verse 3. And while Jesus was at Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he was reclining at table, a woman came up with an alabaster flask of ointment of pure nard, very costly. And she broke the flask and poured it over his head. There was some who said to themselves indignantly, "Why was the ointment wasted like that? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor." And they scolded her. The Greek for scolded her is they rebuked her harshly. They had some strong words for this woman, for how flippant and wasteful she was being. But Jesus said, "Leave her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a beautiful thing for me. For you always have the poor with you, and whenever you want, you can do good for them. But you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for burial. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her." Now, this story, it exists in one form or another in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And Mark tells the story from a very specific angle, but John helps us fill in some of the gaps of this story. See, many scholars believe that this story is talking about the same woman, and John identifies her as Mary, the sister of Lazarus, one of Jesus' closest family friends. Mary is a picture throughout her entire life of someone who loved Jesus well. We see story after story of Mary, and there's several Marys in the Gospels, but Mary, the sister of Lazarus, is someone who loved Jesus so incredibly well. She took this flask of extremely expensive ointment, this flask of nard, and she broke it. Now, it would be very typical in those days and in that time for someone, a guest, to come in a home. It's a very hospitality-minded culture. And for them to be anointed with a few drops of this really expensive oil. It would have been really culturally acceptable, very honorable to have that done to you, to be able to do that towards somebody. That would have raised no eyebrows whatsoever. But this woman, who we're going to call Mary, she just breaks this flask in front of Jesus. She shatters it. And she pours it on his head. John describes her pouring it on his feet as well. And I think what we need to understand here is that this wasn't just a costly thing for her to do. You see, this jar for many families in the time of Jesus, man, this represented their entire family's wealth. It was their backup plan in case of disaster. It was their financial security. It was their financial future. You know, for many people in this day and age, losing this thing could have and would have spelled disaster for their family. And so she doesn't just pour a couple drops on Jesus' head. She shatters this thing. It's as if she is saying to Jesus, "I love you so much that I am willing to release my financial future, my security, everything that makes me safe and comfortable, not to mention the well-being of my own family, for the sake of showing you how much I love you. Religious leaders, Judas over here, ready to use Jesus. Mary, this incredible portrait of what it means to love Jesus deeply. A couple of other things happen in the story that John points out, that John highlights. So I'm going to bring you over now to John chapter 12, verse 3. Notice what it says about Mary in John 12, verse 3 here. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. So not only does Mary shatter this jar, this alabaster jar of ointment before Jesus, but she also goes to his feet. Now, feet are pretty gross. Feet are pretty disgusting. But in Jesus' culture, feet were downright offensive. It was customary in Jesus' day to not show the bottom of your feet to other people because it was that offensive. They were that gross. Bottom of the feet was the equivalent of the middle finger that we have today. You just didn't do it. It was offensive. It was basically telling somebody off. And so for Mary to not only set aside financial security, financial wealth for the sake of loving Jesus well, but she also sets aside her dignity by going to his feet, by taking the position of a servant, the position of a slave, in fact, lower than a servant, lower than a slave. She goes to Jesus' feet. And then the last thing she does is recorded in John 12, 3 here. She begins wiping Jesus' feet with her hair. This is the third and perhaps most significant thing, is that Mary let her hair down at the feet of Jesus. Friends, in Jewish culture, letting your hair down for women meant an absolute sign of closeness and intimacy. You didn't let your hair down in public. You didn't go out into the market with your hair down. You didn't worship with your hair down. You had your hair up. And for Mary to let her hair down at the feet of Jesus was not only undignified, it was not only costly, but man, it was an incredible sign of intimate love towards Jesus. Now, I want to contrast this with the actions of Judas and the actions of the religious leaders. Several of the gospel accounts tell us it's Judas is the one that steps up and says, no. Don't let her smash this jar of ointment. Let's sell it and give the money to the poor. Now, we know Judas didn't really care about giving the money to the poor, and Jesus sensed that, and that's why Jesus says you'll always have the poor among you. Jesus cared deeply about the poor. He wasn't kind of advocating against helping the poor. He just knew Judas' evil motive in his heart, that all he wanted to do was use people and use money and use Jesus and use this ministry for his own gain, and Jesus wanted nothing to do with it. And yet Mary falls at Jesus' feet, deeply in love with him. And as I read this story, this simple, beautiful story, I can learn a few things from Mary's example here. I can learn a few things about what it means to delight in Jesus and to love him well. I think one of the questions that we can ask ourselves is, am I the type of person that uses Jesus? Or am I the type of person that loves Jesus really well? Am I the type of person that uses him, that treats Jesus as a means to my own selfish end? Or am I the type of person that loves Jesus really well? You know, as I was just thinking about my own life in this period of quarantine, I've struggled with some bitterness and some anger towards some of the things that have been lost in this season. Things like not being able to gather as a church, things like moving towards, you know, two services and watching our church grow and seeing God do incredible things in our community, and then feeling like a lot of that has been stripped away. And so I find myself saying over and over and over again, man, I cannot wait to get back. I cannot wait for things to be normal again. And you know what I feel like Jesus has been saying to me over this last week, over this last couple days in this season? Is, man, Brad, if all you care about is getting things back to normal, are you using me or are you loving me? I don't think there's anything wrong with craving being in community again and seeing people again. But for me and me personally, loving Jesus in this season means releasing my own plans for what the future might look like. Loving Jesus well in the season means that we may have to innovate the way we do church for a while. That we may have to be ready for God to do a new thing in our community that doesn't look like the plans that we have before. The same thing can be said of your family. Maybe things will never look the same again for your family after the season, for better or for worse. Are you ready? Are you willing for Jesus to do a new thing in your family? That's what it means to love Jesus well and not just use him. It's an openness. It's a surrender to what he wants to do in your life, in your family, in your finances, even in this quarantine period. Now, I know not everybody has lost a tremendous amount during the season. Some of us, our income has gone up. Some of us, this has been a nice vacation. For others of us, we're really suffering. Our business is hurting. We're really walking through some deep grief, some deep anxiety. And I want to ask you, for your life, during quarantine, in this time, are you loving Jesus for who he is? Are you finding great delight in him? Or are you simply just using him for what he can do for you? Maybe you're listening to this today and you're really mad at God. Mother's Day is a really hard day and you're reflecting on all of the things that you've lost, not just in this season right here and right now, but over this last year, maybe over the last several years. And your posture towards Jesus today is anger. Maybe for you, you're living with tremendous amounts of financial insecurity right now, and you're not sure what the future holds or where things are headed. And there's this angst and this anger inside of you right now, and you don't know where to go with it. And so you push it on Jesus because you don't know where else to go. Mary is a picture of somebody who loves Jesus and says, I'm not going to respond to Jesus with any conditions. In fact, I'm going to submit myself to Jesus wholly and completely with no conditions. I'm not going to make deals with Jesus like if you do this, then I'll do this. I am going to commit myself to him fully. I'm going to do it by breaking the box, by giving up my security, by pursuing him at great cost to myself. There's no cost condition for Mary when it comes to following Jesus. I am willing to give up anything. This isn't a tithe that Mary is offering Jesus. It's everything about her. I'm willing to give up my security and my safety and even my future for Jesus, not just hypothetically. Sometimes I think we say, I would give up anything for Jesus, but thank God he's not calling me to give up everything for him. Mary wasn't just hypothetical about her commitment and her love for Jesus. She was fully in. She does this in getting near his feet and touching his feet, taking the position lower than a slave, which is ironic because soon he will do the same exact thing for his followers. He'll take the position of the slave. He'll wash their feet. He'll get down to their feet. Mary is just emulating what Jesus does by taking the position of a servant towards somebody else. She gets it. She understands. It's pretty typical, I think, for women to understand it a lot faster than men. I think Mary understood it a lot faster than the men that were following Jesus. She willingly gave up her power and her control for the sake of surrendering to him. And then finally, she lets down her hair. She gives up the affirmation and the approval of other people for the sake of experiencing intimacy with Jesus. Friends, what Mary teaches me is that my deepest delight can never be found in my position. I love you. I love being a pastor to this church. I couldn't picture myself anywhere else than right here in this community with you guys, but that is not where my deepest delight lies. I love being a parent. I love being a dad. I love being married to my wife. We're coming up on celebrating our 8th anniversary soon, and I think about how much more deeply I love my wife today than the day we got married. It is a deep, abiding love, but my deepest delight is not in my wife. It's not in my security. It's not in my job. It's not in anything that this world has to offer. My deepest delight is in Jesus. And Mary, the sister of Lazarus, understands this. She understands this when Jesus comes and visits their home and her sister Martha is kind of doing all the things and doing all the chores and, you know, cleaning the house and being the hospitable person. And Mary just wants to sit and be with Jesus. She gets it. She understands that when Jesus comes and her brother Lazarus has passed away and she just falls at her feet. And it's in that moment where Jesus weeps out of love for her. And many who came to visit Mary put their faith in Jesus because of her testimony. There's a major difference between religious people and disciples. Religious people use Jesus. They find him useful. But disciples love Jesus. They find their deepest delight in him. Religious people use Jesus, but disciples delight in him. Many of us maybe grew up in households where we felt used by our parents, where their love was somehow tied to our performance, our grades, our morality, who we were dating, whether or not we fit in the right box. I grew up in a pretty conservative, pretty strict religious home. And to be totally honest, and my parents and I have had conversations about this, I did feel like their love for me was often tied to my performance. Not all the time. I had a great childhood, great parents, but there were times when it really did feel tied to my performance. And as a dad now, I certainly think that there are times where my kids are probably going to feel the same way as well. But more recently, my mom has been doing something that just, it's impacted me so deeply. I don't even think she knows how deeply this has impacted me. Out of the blue, a couple times a year, she'll randomly text me. And her text will be really simple. And it'll just say, "I love you. I'm proud of you. I'm so thankful you're my son." And every time I get those texts, sorry. Every time I get those texts, I get really emotional. Because every single one of us desires to be loved well. Every single one of us desires to be loved for who we are as we are. And I know that today is a day where maybe you're reminded that you have not been loved well by an earthly mother, an earthly parent, that you're struggling with loss, that you're struggling with hurt in this season, that you've had an absent mom or a lost mom, or you long to be a mom, or maybe you feel like a failing mom. And this can apply to parents in general, not even just moms. It can apply to any of us, all of us. I want you to hear something really clearly today. This message is not just about finding delight or delighting in Jesus. But this message is also about the fact that Jesus finds great delight in you. For who you are, as you are right now. Some of you need that hope today. Some of you in the midst of a season of reeling and hurting, and this isn't just for moms or parents, this is for all of us. Some of us need to hear that Jesus delights in us, that there is a Father in heaven who delights in you. Somebody from our church the other day was telling me how badly it hurts to hear God described as a father, because he has a father and a parent who let him down deeply. And so it's offensive. It makes him angry when God is described as a father. And what you need to hear today is that if that is painful for you, if being described as God's child is painful for you, what you need to hear is that God delights in you. That God's love for you is not tied to how well you're performing. That God's love for you is not tied to how much your act is pulled together. That God's love is constant. That God's love is consistent. I love how Jesus closes this section with Mary. He says, she has done what she could. She has anointed my body before him for burial. And truly I say to you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in memory of her. The words that Jesus speaks over you is, I love you. I'm proud of you, my son, my daughter, and I'm thankful you're my child. The text my mom sends to me impact me deeply, because I desire to be loved. I desire to be loved for who I am, where I am, as I am. And you do too. I think it's a longing that God has placed in each and every one of us. But friends, there is no relationship on this planet, no parent-child relationship, no husband-wife relationship, no friend relationship, no pastor relationship that will fill the hole of the one who takes the greatest delight in you, and that is Jesus himself. And so I want to close today just by inviting you to look at your own life and to ask the question, where do I need to find greater delight in Jesus? Not what do I need to do for Jesus? Not where do I need to clean up my act and simply be together? But where do I need to find greater joy and delight in Jesus? You know, one of the things my wife has been doing since quarantine has started almost daily is she's been leaving the house early in the morning, going on walks, putting on some worship music in her headphones, and just being with Jesus. There's no agenda. There's no performance involved. There's no cleaning up her act to make herself presentable to Jesus. She simply is just being with Jesus. If you are tired, if you are worn out in the season, are you spending time with Jesus? Not because you have to, but because he is your greatest delight, the only one who can fulfill what is lost and hurting inside of you. Maybe you're someone who struggles with deep insecurities, deep inadequacies. Stop making your inadequacies your identity and listen to the words that he speaks over you, that you are his beloved son, that you are his beloved daughter, that he is proud of you, that he cherishes you. The scriptures speak of God singing over his children. He's not sitting up there mad at you, ready to strike you down for every mistake, every inadequacy, every insecurity. God is proud of you, and he loves you deeply. Maybe for you, this has been a great season, and your income has gone up, and your family life is perfect, and I want to know your secret, because mine certainly is not perfect. And you're sitting there, and you're thinking to yourself, man, what does it mean for me to take a deeper delight in Jesus? Maybe for you, it's understanding that nothing you have, nothing you are, is of your own doing. That everything is a gift from him. That he delights in you. And that your job as someone who has been blessed is to bless others in return. To give of yourself for the sake of others. To be generous with what he has given you, to be present with people who are hurting and broken, to show empathy towards your neighbor who is not in the same position as you are. And so what happens when we begin to delight in Jesus? Well, it actually frees us to love other people really well. You see, delighting in Jesus doesn't just mean we perform better. Mary didn't perform before Jesus. She came to him with her brokenness. She came to him with what she had to offer. Delighting in Jesus frees us from the need to perform altogether. Delighting in Jesus is about abiding friendship with him. We've talked about that before in the church, but I think a lot of us tend to forget what an abiding friendship with Jesus looks like. It means spending time with him, not because I have to, but because that is the place of greatest rest. That is a place where I can cast my anxiety on him, where I can cultivate a deeper love and a fuller relationship with him. Delighting in Jesus means that I can actually take off my masks in front of other people and be who I am because I am so confident in the Savior who loves me as I am, where I am. What happens in turn is I actually begin to look more like him. That I'm less self-defensive. That I'm more kind. That I'm able to better empathize with my neighbor who is in a different position than I am. Delighting in Jesus can happen wherever you are, whenever you are. If you're waiting for a better circumstance to learn how to delight in Jesus, you're going to be waiting for a really long time. Delighting in Jesus happens now. So I want to challenge you with something this week. Every single day, spend some time with Jesus. Maybe for you, that has to happen in your car. Maybe for you, that has to happen before your kids get up in the morning and it looks like a walk. Maybe for you, that's just pursuing some peace and quiet and some silence. Like literally shutting off all the noise in your life and just sitting in silence and listening to God. Maybe for you, that's praying. It's talking to God when you haven't done that in weeks or months. It's just saying, God, I'm struggling right now. I'm carrying a lot of burdens. Will you grab one for me? Will you help me with this? Maybe for you, it's calling up a friend, a parent, a child, and just saying, I love you. I'm praying for you. I'm thinking about you. I have no other agenda other than just, I want you to know I love you. Because we know the difference between being used and being loved. And there is no greater example of being loved than Jesus, who laid his life down for you, who pursues you, who is proud of you, and who speaks words of delight over you. And so may that encourage you today. May that begin to change something inside of you that begins to see Jesus differently, see other people differently, see the world differently, and may you find hope for today and delight in Jesus where you are right now.